We're doing the Chazon Ish, Emunah u'Bitachon, and we're up to the 15th paragraph in the third chapter. And the Chazon Ish had been discussing this example where there are limitations in competition, where a person can protest and say, you can't come in from the neighboring town and open a pizza shop next door to mine. That's not fair. Open a pizza shop in your town. Why are you competing in my town? And the Chazon Ish had said that in education we don't say that. In education we promote competition. And the Chazon Ish brought this as an example where the halacha really defines for us our ethics. Because the same scenario under certain under a different circumstance is permitted or prohibited. And then the question of who are you fighting for, well, that's defined by the halacha, who's in the right. So the Chazon Ish continues now, going deeper into his example. Ve'omnam, but, uman shel bnei mata, when we look at the tradesmen within that city, dematzi le'akev mishum pasakta lechayutai, that he can protest the entrance of another tradesman, because he can say, you are severing my livelihood. There's only enough business here for one pizza shop. You open the pizza shop next door, you're finishing me. Or there's only enough livelihood here for one blacksmith or tanner, etc. Eino al tzad metziut el al tzad chiyuv ha'ishtadlut. The Chazon Ish says this isn't from a practical, realistic perspective. Rather, it's from a perspective of hishtadlut. What does God want me to do in pursuit of my livelihood? And he'll explain. Shekol mezonotav shel adam ketzuvin lo merosh hashana ve'ad yom kippurim. Technically, it's already been decided in heaven between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur how much money a person's going to make. Ve'lo yechsar lo im yiyeh kan uman shel mata achrita. And he won't lose anything if a neighboring butcher comes into town, a neighboring pizza shop, a neighboring blacksmith comes into town. Whatever he was supposed to make, that's what he's going to make. And he's not going to make more money if the other guy isn't here. But God created a world where he says there is a certain amount of hishtadlut you have to do. A person says, I'm going to make whatever money I'm supposed to make this year, so I won't get out of bed. No, there's a certain amount of effort every one of us has to put in order to succeed. There's a certain amount of effort that's correct. So then part of my effort is to protect my legal rights. Legally, I can protest and say there isn't enough business here for both of us. Then that's part of the effort I have to put in. I have a responsibility to ensure other people don't harm me. The Chafetz Chaim is taking the halachic perspective and taking it into the realm of hashkafa. Now, in order to appreciate what he's talking about here, let's take a few cases, modern day cases. So, God willing, you will all merit to get married and have children. We live in a day and age where you can test almost every day for all kinds of syndromes and diseases within the baby. How far do you go? Do you do 3 ultrasounds of pregnancy or do you do 10? Do you check the heartbeat once a month or do you check the heartbeat once a week? You know, I know quite a few people this year who gave birth to a dead baby. So maybe every woman should check the heartbeat every week, make sure the baby's still alive. But that's not enough either. Maybe you should check every day. Maybe women should walk around with a monitor that keeps checking how far do you go. And does the Torah have anything to say about this? People are very nervous about certain things. Some people are nervous about cancer, so they'll have themselves checked. Skin doctors will wear special glasses and check your whole body, all your skin for you, if you want. How often should you go? Once a week? Once a year? Once every 5 years? Today they're recommending that every person does a test because there's a type of cancer that attacks the digestive tract. So they say past a certain age, Every person should get themselves tested. You know what that means. You take a fluid that causes a person to clean out his innards, and then they stick a tube down from the top, and they stick a tube up from the bottom, and they check all the infrastructure in there. Should you be doing that every week, every month, every year, every 5 years? Should everyone be doing that? How often should you do mammograms? You're about to marry someone. How much should you check? You know, the average person has 5 deficiencies, 5 genetic issues. But there are so many genetic issues out there that the average person gets married and the 5 don't match, so you don't have a genetic problem. But you know, the average person has 5 genetic problems. Now, should we all go get ourselves tested? Do you know how much money that would cost? To get yourself genetically tested to cover the gamut of diseases and deficiencies they know today. First of all, you'd have a waiting period of about 6 months, because I think there are 2 laboratories in the world that actually test all the DNA. There's one in the United States and there's one in Europe. I don't know if there are more than that. And obviously no one does it. We check for the common things. How far do you go? So in all of life, we have this question: how concerned should I be? How much effort do I have to put in? So in Judaism, we call this question the question of hishtadlut. How much effort do I have to put in any issue? A person can say, I had a friend who would always answer his cell phone. And it didn't matter what he was doing, he would always answer his cell phone, because he'd always say, this might be the big deal I'm waiting for. He never got the big deal he was waiting for. But he'd always answer his cell phone and say, you know, this might be important. I'm sorry. And the whole world could wait. It didn't matter what was going on. You know, he was once a witness at a wedding ceremony. You understand what happened next? I'm sorry, just saying, it might be really important. Okay, how far do we take our hishtadlut? How far do you take your effort? And you can't say you got to go as far as you can, because then there's no limit. So that's the question the Chazon Ish is dealing with here. If I want to ensure I succeed in business, so what do I do now? You know, there are people who are in investments, so today they could have the stock market on their cell phone, and every second you can see it. I remember when I was in elementary school, so one of my really good friends, his father was in the fur business, in the fur industry. And then when PETA came out and they were attacking everyone for selling furs, so they put him out of business. And he went into the stock market. And I once came to their house, and in those days you didn't have computers. This was before the days of Windows. So they had on the TV, the news would have on the bottom the quotes of the stock market. You'd see on the bottom of the screen, it would keep running, the stock market. What's it called?
Ticker tape.
Ticker tape, yeah. Okay. This guy would sit there all day watching it. This is what he was doing all day. He left his fur business all day. He was sitting there watching the ticker go. Okay, fine, you know, to each his own. But how far do you go? So that's a question which we're challenged with all the time. Parents are challenged with this. How many tests? How many vaccines? How many tests do you do in utero before a baby's born? How much do you want to know? How much should you know? How much could you know? So the Chazon Ish is bringing up this question. How far do you fight the competition? When do you say whatever was supposed to happen on Rosh Hashanah, that's the amount of money I'm going to make? Well, if that's the attitude, maybe I shouldn't do anything. Whatever I'm supposed to make, I'll make. No, so you say a certain amount of ishtadlut I have to do. So the Chafetz Chaim says, you have a certain... Chazon Ish, thank you. The Chazon Ish says, if you have the capacity legally to protect your rights from the competition entering your field, so then that's what you're expected to do. You have a responsibility to protect yourself from being harmed by someone else. But what happens if the halacha doesn't allow you to protect yourself from the neighbor? Then you do not have that hishtadlut. So our level of hishtadlut is defined by halacha. If the halacha allows me to prevent him from opening his store next to me, so then that's what I'm supposed to do. But if the halacha does not allow me, so then I don't have to do that. That's not hishtadlut. Then al chaverom mishum azik, and he's not harming me. אבל המטריף לחם חוקו של כל יצור בטח ייתן לו די מחסוכו. And that's when we say, he's in control. והרדיפה אחר סיבות המדומות לפי תיאור הלב וזנות העיניים הבל. And when a person spends his time chasing after and saying, you know, maybe this is what's going to do it, and that's what's going to do it, he says, that's all waste. A person imagines that there are a million different things that will get him in. No, says the Chazon Ish. You have a realm within that range, you have to do what you have to do. And beyond that range, that's not our responsibility. That's not so easy to do. Or very often we get the feeling that if only I would be open on Shabbos, I'd make more business. If only I would cut a few corners, I'd make more money. That's where Chazal warned us. It's been decided between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. You don't have to go crazy over your money. Whatever you're supposed to make, you're going to make. Again, that doesn't allow us to be lazy. Because that's provided that you're going to do whatever you can and within a realm of reason. But what happens when he decides his focus is to destroy the competition? Because in his mind, he's not willing to accept the idea that whatever he's supposed to make, he's going to make. No. In his mind, my problem in life is the competition across the street. And then anytime something goes bad, he says it's all his fault. Back in Europe, my great-grandfather had a lumber business back in Poland. And he kept wood. And he kept developing his business. And there were two shops on the same block. They both lived there. I think the other guy was even the new guy in town. But legally, halachically, they could both keep their shops open. And my great-grandfather always believed that if you're kind to other people, that's the way to succeed in life. So he was always nice to people. And the competition down the block always believed that you have to look how to make money at every corner, and that's how you'll be successful. And so his business kept going down, and my great-grandfather's business kept going up. It reached a point where my great-grandfather owned like a whole block in Poland. The Nazis took it all away, but his business kept growing, he kept thriving. And his competition once came into the store and said to him, and if I remember correctly, he was there first. The competition opened up after he was open. But the guy walked into the store and said, you know why I don't succeed? The only reason I don't make money is because you're around. And my great-grandfather answered him. He said, you know why you don't succeed? Because you're busy looking at every customer that walks into my store. If you'd be more busy developing your store than looking at what's happening in my store, then you'd be succeeding too, because there's enough business here for both of us. But because you're always focused on what your problem is, that I'm your problem, so that's why you're not succeeding. Chazon Ish says, "Bizman shemesim et reyo lematrat chitzav shel merirut yomo," when his focus, he's shooting his arrows always in that direction, and he says, the whole reason I'm not succeeding is because of that guy. Be'et shereyo zakai b'mishpitei Torah. Now, if the other guy is legally, halachically permitted to have his store open, he's not doing you any harm. He says, what's really happening is, the person says, God's not really watching what's happening down below. That's the scary thing. If we'd stop and think about it, why are we cheating on our taxes? Because we're telling ourselves, I will make more this way. I had an interesting shaila this morning. A woman called up and said that her daughter is going to turn 5 this week. Now she's going to turn 5 by the Gregorian calendar. And by the Jewish calendar, she's only going to turn 5. It's a leap year, so she'll only turn 5 in 10 days. So she wanted to know if she has to pay the fare on Eged. Eged charges you for a kid once they become 5 years old. Does she have to pay for the kid now because... So she said, I live by the Jewish calendar. Why do I have to go by the Gregorian calendar? That was her question. So I said to her, no. Once she turns 5 by the Gregorian calendar, you have to pay. And there were two reasons for what I said. The real reason was because I think most of the law in this country goes by the Gregorian calendar. So unless she can prove that the law backs her, I don't think she's allowed to halachically, but I told her a different reason because she'd think I wasn't religious enough if I told her that one. So I said to her, look, what happens if the bus driver asks, how old is she? What happens if she blurts out or Mifakech comes on the bus, he's checking and he wants to see the Tudat Zehut. Now you're going to have an argument with them explaining why you're right. And even if the law, technically you could argue, is on your side, what happens next is half the people on the bus are seeing an Orthodox from woman who came on and looked for a way out of paying those 3 shekel for her daughter for 10 days. What are we talking about? How often are you going to take the bus in 10 days? Meaning in 10 days, you also agree you're going to have to pay. So for 10 days, let's say you'll take the bus 3 times for 9 shekel, you're willing to risk slandering God's name. The people will look at an Orthodox woman and say, look at how she tried to skimp the bus company. No, spend the 9 shekel. No, it should be more important to you not to cause a chilul Hashem. What are people going to say when they see you do that on the bus?
Teach your kid.
Oh, so she was. I was very impressed. I heard her on the phone telling the kid, the rabbi said we will invest 9 shekel in sanctifying God's name. So I was impressed. I said, okay, she made up for the question with the answer. So okay, that was nice. And then I guess she was hanging up, she was explaining it to the kid. I said, okay, that's nice. But what are we thinking when we try to cut a corner? If I understand that there's a hand running what's going on here, and I have to do my effort as has been ordained by above, and whatever I'm supposed to make, that's what I'm going to make. I have to do mine. But at the end of the day, it's been decided, so then I'm not going to win or lose anything. I have to do mine. Whatever's going to have to happen is going to have to happen, but I have to do mine.
שמעיקריה יראה להאמין שאין בריאה בעולם שבכוחה להרע לו או להיטיב לו זולת גזרתו יתברך.
One of the most fundamental points that every person is expected to accept is that no one can harm a person unless God approves it.
ואומנם אם ראו עושה רשע שלא במשפט ייתכן שעליו נאמר מגגלין חוב על ידי חייו.
So you'll tell me, but then how can people be wicked? If a person chooses to be wicked, can't he be wicked? So our sages have a rule. Our sages say, "Megalgelin chov al yedei chayav." If something bad has to happen in the world, God looks for bad people to bring bad things into the world. So when we see bad people doing bad things, our sages said, the bad thing was going to happen anyways. God was just looking for a bad person to bring it to the world. And that's a very powerful concept, because that also means that we have to look at ourselves. And the same concept works inversely. We have to try to be emissaries of good, because God looks for good people to bring good things to the world. It goes both ways. That's why sometimes people will tell me about something, it's not your fault. And I'll say, that's true, but if I had a hand in causing it to happen, I have to be concerned, because we were taught that God uses good people to bring good things to the world and bad people to bring bad things to the world. It's not enough always to say it's not your fault. We have to try to be sources of good in the world.
So if up above they decreed it should happen, so they look for the evil pundit. He's the one who's going to bring it to the world.
But at the end of the day, it's been decided up above he's going to do it.
אכן בעת שעושה על פי התורה אין זה בכלל שליחות רע כלל ואינו נוגע במה שמוכן לחברו כלל.
But if I'm going in accordance with the Torah, so what if I'm suing for my rights? I'm entitled to sue for my rights. It's not considered that I'm doing evil to the next guy. If he's infringing on my rights, then I'm entitled to sue and say no. So that's what the Chazon Ish just took this concept, took it off on a tangent to teach us phenomenal points. He says, number one, the halacha not only defines for us our ethics, the halacha also defines for us the level of effort we are to invest. If I'm in the right halachically, then it's okay to invest that amount of effort. Otherwise not. We have to realize that after I've figured out what's right and wrong, I've also figured out how much effort is correct for me to invest. If I recognize God is running the show, then I don't have to be concerned. I've done what I'm supposed to, the rest is in His hands, and more effort is not going to change anything. He's in charge of the world. Now, more diligence might. You run a cleaner store, you make it a nicer environment, no one's saying you won't succeed more.
If you're more efficient and you get the product out on time, you might get more buyers. That's true. There is an element of get it done right and then it will succeed. But that's all within kosher hishtadlut. That's where I'm making a normal effort to succeed. Once I go beyond the norm and I say, I'm going to control it, I'm going to ensure it happens, then I'm saying he's not running the world. And that's where a person cheats on his taxes, tries to steal, does efforts that are beyond what the halacha permits. What he's basically saying is he's not running the world. God's not running the world. And that come, and with that he concluded with the idea that when we see someone doing evil in the world, we should remember the concept our sages taught us. Up above they decide when evil will happen, and they decide which evil person will bring it. But that's to his detriment. It's not him who's really deciding who he's going to hurt. And those of you, again, who want to expand on this point, there's a whole class on this online in the, after the murder in Merkaz Arav. Where 8 students were murdered. We went into this point in depth. It's titled, I think, after the Merkaz Arav massacre. Yes?
We live in the state, and the official take taxes more than I like to give them. And for their communists or their anti-taste or something like that. So let's go the limit. Because I pay taxes, they decide, small example in Romania, they decide to ruin all the small companies. They put a higher taxes, so even you cannot close the, you must pay 1,000 euro to close the company. So I live there, but what's supposed to do?
Right. So that's a, without giving a complete answer, I would just say, let's look at the principles we just learned, and from there we can infer what the answer would be. If the halacha backs, if the halacha says it's legitimate to make a move that's A or B or C, so then that move is okay within the realm of Ishtadlut. And if the halacha says, tough luck, you're part of a system. People often ask, is it okay if I ride the bus or the train and I don't pay the fare? And I'll figure out a way of getting around the conductor, the guy who will come checking my ticket. So if they catch me, I'll pay the fine, you know. It doesn't work that way. There's a contract. The halacha says you want to ride the train, you have to pay for the train. You're getting a service. You don't want to ride the train, don't. You can't say, well, I don't like the service they give, and they really should have trains more often, and they really should have this bus running more often, and there's a much better route that I'd be happier with, and they're not doing that, so I'm not going to pay. No, so then don't ride the bus. So once the halacha defined for us what I have to do, so then I'm obligated. There will be instances where the government is completely illegitimate, where everyone knows that everything's a lie. Where there's a, it's just a question of who's bribing whom, but the whole system is a farce. There are countries where that's the case, unfortunately, where everyone knows there's nothing real about it. So there can be instances where the halacha would say, in this case, obviously, why play by the rules? They'll tell you here in Israel, they had a law that in order to build a certain wall in your house, you needed to get authorization, you needed to get a permit from the government. And it was a simple wall, Kir Gevis, how do you say that in English? Plaster wall. A plaster wall. Okay, so if you wanted to build, you had a house, you had an apartment here in Kiryat Moshe, you wanted to add a plaster wall to make another room, you needed a certain permit. So there was a rabbi here in this neighborhood who decided he's going to go by the book. So he went to the zoning board and he asked for a permit. And they said, we don't have such permits. And he said, but the law says I need such a permit. Who can give me one? So they looked at him and they said, no one ever asks for one. We don't have the permit to give. Okay, so here you see there's a law which the state says we don't respect the law. So there are laws which you sometimes say, okay, you know, in such a case, so would you tell a person you can't build that wall because you don't have a permit? Or do you say, well, the law is obviously not really, they don't mean what they say in that case. So sometimes it's hard to draw the line. But the rule is that the halacha will define for us what's fair and unfair and what's correct ishtadlut and what's not. you're right that not all cases are identical. There are situations which the halacha will permit us to make moves, like you mentioned. Yes, that's true. Each scenario has to be analyzed.